Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod, taped this morning on the heels of Boston's trade with Oklahoma City. The Celtics traded Kemba Walker and the 16th pick in this July's NBA draft, a 2025 second round pick to the Thunder, and Boston gets back Al Horford. They'll get Moses Brown and a 2023 second round pick for Boston. This was a significant deal, the first deal of Brad Stevens' tenure as the president of basketball operations, and gets off essentially Kemba Walker's contract, the $73 million owed him over the next 2 years, and certainly the concerns that Boston has had about Kemba's durability. There's no other concerns you would have about Kemba Walker, the person, the player, certainly the leader. He's been all those things in his career. But this is business, and he goes to OKC, who now has three picks in the first round of July's draft. They might have two top five picks based on how things shake out in the lottery with themselves and then what happens with Houston, and sort through all that. But here with Tim Bontemps, who covers the Celtics for us at ESPN. Tim, how are you, man?
Doing well, Adrian. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. And so this deal for Boston, Tim, and how they move forward now, what do you see kind of the short and long-term ramifications being of moving Walker out, what that means for what else they can do this summer moving forward, and then the point guard spot in Boston here in the near term?
Well, in the short term, Adrian, what this does is gives Boston financial flexibility. Like you said, Kemba Walker's owed $73 million over the next two seasons. Al Horford is owed either 53 if he's on the team both seasons. He's owed 41 if they move on from him in the second year of that deal, which is partially guaranteed, unless the Celtics win the title this year, which if they win the title, I think they'll happily pay him the full freight that following season. But ultimately, this allows them to have the ability to maybe re-sign Evan Fournier as a free agent this summer. Brad Stevens, now obviously running the show in Boston, has been pretty effusive in his praise of Fournier since he got acquired at the deadline from Orlando. He gives them some of the stuff they lost with Gordon Hayward being out. They obviously still have to make a decision on Marcus Smart. He has 1 year left on his contract. They can extend him for around $70 million over 4 years. I'll be curious to see if they can get a deal done there. As you know, the Celtics have had a lot of guys leave with no compensation the past years of free agency, including Al Horford a couple of years ago. So I think they have to come to some decision one way or the other on Marcus Smart. Do they keep him and extend him long term, or do they maybe have to look to trade him? And then, like you said, long term, ultimately what this team has to do is figure out who they could put around Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to get this team back to being a championship caliber roster and organization in the East. Because if you look, you know, if you watch the Bucks and Nets play, if you watch, you know, even the Sixers and Hawks play in the other series, Boston was not on the level of those teams this year. And if they want to, you know, be back in the championship hunt, even with two of the best young wings in the league, they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, they do. And part of the work Boston has to do is to hire a coach. Yep. Brad Stevens is running that process now, and, you know, figure out who the right guy is for this Celtic team. You know, they've talked, they've had, you know, first round of interviews with several candidates. And so I think for Boston, you know, they're trying to figure out what the roster looks like, style of play, how they want to move forward. And listen, for Brad Stevens, this, you know, when you move over from coach to, you know, president of basketball operations, like these are tough decisions, and they're tough decisions when you sign a player of Walker's stature in free agency. And yep, there's always a hesitancy that does it impact the next free agent you go after? And you say, well, I signed with Boston and they traded me. And I know, I think that the injuries are the most significant part of the reason this happened. But even with Gordon Hayward, and there would be talk early on in his tenure, he had the injury, obviously, but there was always a hesitancy to move him. Because, yes, you recruited a player, you sold them on something, and you move them out, but it makes it harder to get the next guy. But you also, you can't sit and hold on to him and hold everything else back, too. And so that makes it a difficult decision. And then there's OKC, who is gladly there again to take on your Sam Presti takes on your contract, the $73 million owed Kemba over a couple of years, and he'll do exactly what he did with Chris Paul, with Al Horford himself, with Carmelo Anthony. When it's time to move you on to get you where, you know, you might like to go. Horford is certainly thrilled with being back in Boston. He never really wanted to leave, but financially it made sense for him to go do that deal with the Sixers. And then obviously he got traded out. But I think now Presti has three picks. Oklahoma City has three picks, first round picks in the July draft, potentially two top five picks based on how the lottery bounces. And then Celtics are the 16th pick. So however the breakdown comes in the draft, you have the assets to, and you know, they've got like, what is it? 18 first round picks over the next
18 first round picks the next 7 years,
for the next couple years. Yeah.
Yep.
So you have the ability to package not only the ones you have this year, but future picks or whatever it is you want to, if you target a guy in the top five that you love and you say, hey, we want to get to three, we want to get to two, and we're going to offer you. And so Oklahoma City is going to be able to do that for the next few drafts, to be able to, even if they're not at the very top, they'll have a package to be able to get them there if there's a player they really love. That's why Sam Presti was down in that G League bubble for a couple weeks, you know, and he was
getting a lot of looks at Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, that's for sure.
Exactly. He got to spend time and watch them and know if they're in that ballpark, are those, you know, to know as much as he could about those players. And so Oklahoma City does that. Sam Presti and Brad Stevens go back. I know they've known each other since Brad was coaching at Butler. I think Sam was always, like a lot of NBA executives, was always intrigued with Brad Stevens and built a relationship with him. And then obviously now Brad's in a position to be doing these kinds of deals. So, and getting the deal done before the combine is pretty rare. Typically these kinds of trades don't start happening till after the combine. You don't see these like when we're in the conference semifinals.
Last time I remember a deal like even in the playoffs happening was I remember we were in Cleveland for the finals when Ersan Ilyasova got traded. I think you're pretty sure you broke the trade. I think he was either traded to or from Detroit or something like that. But I remember that happening during the finals. But like you said, having it happen even before the combine is pretty unusual.
It is. And so we'll see. The combine's next week in Chicago. So that, which means all the team front office people, the agents, and that's where, and then more importantly, the draft lottery is Tuesday night on ESPN, of course. The draft lottery, then that's where people can start to get serious about trade talks, because now you know where you're picking, who's where, and it's a lot easier to start talking about putting picks in trades, especially among lottery teams, once you know where you fall. So that stuff heats up next week, but Sam Presti, Brad Stevens got this done today, and they informed Kemba of the deal and Al Horford of the deal, and away, you know, away we go. So but this Boston team, listen, the coaching opening is still very attractive because they have something that none of the other teams have. I mean, Dallas has Luka, and that's certainly the at 22 years old. Listen, Dame Lillard, you can go coach Dame Lillard, which is an extraordinary player, but Luka's 22. And there's a much greater runway, certainly a much longer runway with him in Dallas. But Boston has two all-stars under 25 and Jaylen Brown and, of course, Jason Tatum. And so the pieces are there to reshape this roster. And now that's what's on Brad Stevens to do.
Well, yeah. And look, Boston also, in the almost 20 years that Wick Rusbeck and Sipag Liuka have owned the Celtics, they've had one president of basketball operations and they've had two coaches, right? So When you look at this team, not only having two young all-star players, but also having long-term stability and the ability to, in theory, really have a chance to grow into the job, you know, that's not something that happens very often. You know, part of the reason everybody has been, you know, the Dallas Mavericks stuff this week has been such a big thing is that Donnie Nelson and Rick Carlisle have been institutions in Dallas, right? It's the same reason that the Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens stuff here in Boston was such a big thing because those guys were here for so long. And to get a chance to not only have a team with the kind of young talent that the Celtics do, but also a place where you are going to get a chance to actually really, you know, sink your teeth into the job and be there for a while is a really attractive combination in a league where, as you know better than anybody, you know, chaos reigns supreme most of the time.
Yes. And no more so than in this last week, it feels like. It has been fairly chaotic. You know, we've got, Western Conference Finals. We've got, obviously, the Clipper Jazz Game 6 in L.A. tonight. We've got a Bucks Nets Game 7 this weekend. And so, and obviously a Atlanta Sixer Game 6 that is going to be big for that Philly organization. So a lot coming to a head. Kemba Walker is off to the Thunder, at least for now. And Tim, you and I will certainly be monitoring all of these things. Good to catch up with you. Appreciate you jumping on the pod, and I know we'll talk soon, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Adrian.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks, sports availability varies by zip code, and requires choice package.
Back here on the Woj Pod with the great Tim McMahon, ESPN's NBA reporter. Tim, how are you, man?
Doing all right, Woj. Man, I like that intro.
You liked it?
I like that, yeah.
I mean, you texted it to me last night, and then you revised it this morning.
Listen.
Said, all right. Can you? I had good. I had good. I had the good reporter. We negotiated. We moved it to great. But
you started off with halfway decent. I was able to negotiate from there.
Well, listen. A lot happening in your backyard in Dallas, and as we reported yesterday, Rick Carlisle walked away with 2 years left on his deal as head coach. Donnie Nelson, the president of basketball operations /GM. Was ousted this week. And all of a sudden in Dallas, where you had two figures in place, Donnie Nelson for 20 plus years, Rick Carlisle, one of the highest, longest tenured head coaches in any team, 13 years in Dallas, obviously won the NBA title as coach in 2011, both gone within just a couple of days. And this is an organization that has run itself very differently than a lot of the rest of the league. And they certainly had great success in the Dirk Nowitzki era. They obviously won the championship. They were a perennial 50-win team. Did it, with when they won free agency, veterans, paying a big luxury tax bill when it was time to win, and then had a stretch as Dirk was fading. Mm-hmm. Into his twilight and pre Luka, where a lot of draft picks didn't work out and free agent signings, they maxed out Chandler Parsons, they maxed out Wes Matthews, and that's what happened.
A lot of big targets,
they whiffed on a lot of big targets. And what ends up happening when you don't draft well is you end up overpaying in free agency and you're giving max contracts to good players and not great ones. And that takes its toll on your cap, your roster. And then they make the Luka Doncic draft night deal. And all of a sudden now have a second transcendent player of this Mark Cuban era. But at 22 years old and with what's ahead for Luka here, how does Dallas have to approach maybe modernizing the organization and having something built in a little more traditional way than, I don't want to call it a mom and pop thing, but it was this group that knew each other very well that did it differently. They just did it differently than a lot of the league. Mark Cuban has been very involved in basketball operations. No question about that. Does it have to look different moving forward, Tim?
Well, I think really the question is Mark Cuban willing to give up control? That's the question. And, you know, Donnie Nelson was the president of basketball operations, but I joke that his job, that was always his title, but his actual job kind of ebbed and flowed between president of basketball operations and secretary of basketball operations. Because, you know, sometimes he had Mark Cuban's ear, and, you know, they, you know, for example, the Luka deal was definitely his. There were obviously several others that didn't work out. Sometimes he didn't have Cuban's ear. And, you know, for example, when he pounded the table and tried telling him, hey, Giannis is the best player in this draft. And there's been a lot of voices over the years who have kind of been the primary influence on Cuban. So I think really the question comes down to, as they're making the, you know, head of basketball operations hire, whatever that title ends up being, is Cuban willing to hire somebody and give them the authority to run the franchise? And that's a big question mark that's kind of hanging over, because if you're going to really reset the basketball culture of the franchise, you have to start there.
And that's it, Tim. And I think autonomy is a relative word in the NBA. There are very few top basketball executives, very few, less than ever, who really can do whatever it is they wish. And ultimately, they just need a rubber stamp by ownership. More and more owners are very involved. Some maybe not to the degree of Mark Cuban, but he was the model for a lot of guys who bought into the league. And they saw how Mark Cuban was doing it, how much fun Mark Cuban was having. And I think it incentivized a lot of this newer breed of owner, not just in the NBA, I think everywhere. I think Mark Cuban, Jerry Jones, both Dallas figures where you saw you could buy a team and you didn't have to just hand it off. But the league has changed. And if they're going to attract a high-level candidate, for all of the reasons the job's attractive, great market in Dallas, a player in Luka Doncic who's probably almost assuredly going to be a multi-time most valuable player. And obviously an owner, Mark Cuban, who's very invested, who's going to spend the money, who's going to do what it takes to try and compete and win. Those are all reasons you'd want the job. Mm-hmm. The question is going to be, will Mark give me the room to build out a front office, an organization, the way that I think it needs to be done or the way that I did it somewhere else? And I think that's going to be for Mark at this point. He's never not going to be involved. We know he's capable of it. But is he capable of taking a step back and allowing someone more space and room to carry out a plan and to have, like we said, like some processes in place that maybe haven't been there?
Well, and here's the thing. Mark Cuban will listen to people. Whoever he hires, he has to listen to that person on a consistent basis. It can't be, well, you're the primary decision-making influence now, and, well, I've got this analytics guy that I really like here. Well, no, this agent's telling me this now. And, you know, it has to flow through the president of basketball operations or whatever they decide to make this hire. And that's where, you know, in this last situation, it became, you've got Bob Vulgaris, who's kind of a Cuban handpicked, you know, love his data. They can talk cryptocurrency, whatever. Smart basketball guy. But when he is reporting to Cuban and, you know, is not in communication with Donnie, that becomes adversarial. It becomes dysfunctional really quickly. And you just can't have that type of situation. Everything has to flow through the guy that you are putting in charge of basketball operations.
Tim, if they're going to bring in a real president of basketball operations, whatever the title is, they're going to hire a real person. Bob Vulgaris can't be there.
No,
there's no one who's going to accept him in the middle of all this. To me, I think that's going to be a non-starter for anyone of any real stature in the league.
I think Cuban realizes that. I think Bob Vulgaris realizes that. And you know, the other thing is, there are other frayed relationships with Vulgaris within the organization. Obviously, the Luka one, depending on what they do with the coaching staff. Mark Cuban will have a very strong analytics department. Bob Vulgaris, I cannot imagine a circumstance where he will be in charge of that.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
You mentioned Luka, and he's on course here to be offered, and I think all indications would sign that $200 million extension, his rookie extension. He's eligible for the Supermax because he's been
two-time first-team All-NBA.
Two-time first-team All-NBA makes him already qualified. Players like Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum signed their rookie extensions with the hope of making Jason Tatum needed to make All-NBA again this year to be able to be eligible for that. Luka's already, you know, he's done it out of the gate. I think sometimes people believe that players are really tethered to certain executives, certain coaches.
Yeah.
I don't find that is the case. I think Luka was fond of Donnie Nelson. I think he was very fond of Donnie Nelson. I think he was loyal and grateful and appreciative of the fact that Donnie believed in him, that Donnie pursued him, got the deal done, brought him to Dallas. You know, he certainly knew Donnie's connections in Europe and his, you know, what Donnie has meant to really the revolution in the league that took place over a few decades of great European talent coming to the NBA. Donnie was at the forefront of that. But life goes on. And I think the way Luka's going to look at it, my sense is, it's up to Mark now to put a structure in place, front office and head coach, that is going to allow Luka to win. Because at the end of the day, whether he likes this guy, doesn't like this guy as much, Luka wants to win. He's a fierce competitor. And I think all of those other things, I think sometimes we make too much of the relationships, especially when it's somebody like Luka who is just so hell-bent on winning. And so whether he likes everybody or doesn't like everybody, you better put a team around him that's going to be competing for championships, because that's what's going to be. He has shown that is what matters to him. And so I think now it's incumbent on Mark to sell that vision to Luka and certainly allow him to have a voice in this. Dallas is the only place he's known in the NBA.
Right.
Rick Carlisle is the only head coach he's known. And Jamal Mosley, who we know he's very fond of and has great respect for, who is the top assistant there and certainly will be a candidate, I think, whoever gets the job running basketball operations, like that's who he's known. And so to expect Luka to have opinions about different people around the league at 22 years old, it's different when you're a player who's 32 and you've been around the league and you've seen and the relationships you have, you understand maybe better on different coaches. At 22 years old, it's just not fair to expect a player to have all of that perspective and context. And I think he's got to lean on the organization now and trust them that they're going to be able to navigate this and get him what he needs now.
Yeah, and Luka at 22, my understanding, he doesn't want, you know, necessarily the responsibilities of
not
okay, decision making and dictate. Like there have been, you know, there have been times where if Luka wanted to throw his weight around, you know, down the roster, decisions would have been made differently. He didn't. He doesn't want those. Luka wants to hoop and win. Those are those. That's what matters to him now. And look, the Rick Carlisle relationship was tense. Okay. And I do think that factored into, the ultimate decision that Rick made to walk away, just because and I haven't spoken to Rick specifically on this since he made his decision, but it is no secret that his seat was going to be hot going into the next season, that there were concerns about the tense dynamic between him and Luka. And, you know, in defense of Luka, it's not like he was the only player who was butting heads with Rick, who had butted heads with Rick. But if we're being real honest about it, when it comes to those kind of decisions being made within a franchise, Luka was the only one that mattered. You're not as concerned if the sixth man or, you know, the fourth starter or, you know, those guys are wearing thin on Rick. But if it's the 22-year-old MVP candidate that you're hoping to keep in town for a decade and a half, yes, those things do become concerns. But, you know, again, it's not like Luka goes to Mark Cuban or anybody in the front office and says, hey, we need to make a change here. It's just a sense within the franchise. And I'm, you know, Rick is a perceptive guy. I'm sure he felt that as well.
Yeah. And Rick sees a marketplace where he's going to be wanted. Rick's not a fit everywhere right now. And I don't think everywhere is a fit for Rick in terms of the jobs that are available. But I think the teams who are in more of a win now mode, who have playoff teams, who are trying to either win a championship or maybe advance deeper than they might have in the playoffs otherwise without him, are going to take a look at Rick Carlisle. And so, you know, he walks into multiple openings around the league and is going to certainly have an opportunity to talk to teams and see if there's a fit for him out there. So that makes a lot of sense. And as Mark Cuban told you yesterday, you know, he's going to hire a director of basketball operations before he hires a coach. That's how you should do it. We've seen it done backwards. It almost never works. And
right.
More than anything, the Mavs need, they need synergy. And the way you get that is allowing that person, and you limit your pool of candidates if you put a coach in place.
Right.
And then try to hire the president GM, you may just limit who might be interested. And so, yeah, this is going to be a telltale time for the organization. And I just think when you think about where, as they built a team around Dirk, and now they try to do it around Luka, I think they won a championship, and ultimately you are judged on results. And like we said, they won 50 games multiple times and just a highly successful organization. But the in-between time showed a lot of cracks in the processes in that organization. And whether it was draft, whether it was free agency, trades, there were a lot more misses than hits. And everybody's going to have misses in the league. Everybody does. But I think now there's a chance, and I think you use this word, to hit the reset button in Dallas, and it's going to just be interesting for Mark and how he wants to approach this. But I think there is going to be no shortage, and I've already sensed it. There's no shortage of executives who might be interested in finding out what exactly Mark has in mind moving forward.
Well, and there's certainly an understanding within the organization, starting with Cuban, that Luka is not Dirk. Just like Kawhi Leonard was not Tim Duncan. And, you know, Dirk gave them two decades of uncrackable loyalty, never really considered leaving. They are going to have to convince Luka that this is a place where he can consistently contend for championships. And if we're being, you know, maybe pessimistic, but I think realistic, there's probably a 3-year window to do that. He's going into the last year of his rookie contract. If he signs that Supermax, yeah, it's a 5-year deal, but guess what? Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum got player options. Luka Doncic will get a player option on that last year. You can go ahead and pencil that in. So you're talking about, you know, last year, this deal, 4 years of that. We just saw James Harden push his way out with 2 years plus a player option left. And I'm not saying that that's what Luka wants at all. I matter of fact, I would, my feeling is probably the exact opposite. He would love nothing more than to be in Dallas his whole career contending for championships. But with a player of that kind of talent, there comes a pressure to compete just because your window's open, and also to be able to convince him that you will be contending for your entire prime here. So they've got a few years to really kind of put those pieces in place. And look, they've got the most difficult piece to find. They've got the centerpiece. You've got to fill in the puzzle around them, and that starts with the guy who's putting the puzzle together.
Well, right. And I think and exactly what you're saying, Tim, is no one's questioning Luka's desire to want to be in Dallas. I think he's going to sign that extension. I don't have any indication that there's something that would he's going to process what's happening here, but you can't take it for granted. And the days of just measuring when a player becomes a free agent as to what your window is, that's gone. We are in a league of perpetual free agency. Whether you have 1 year on your deal, 2 years, 3 years left, name me the last player in the NBA who said, I want out of significant stature and didn't get out by the end of that season.
Yeah.
And no, so it doesn't matter that you have it just because you've signed a new deal. That doesn't mean you just know you've got this thing in place for 4 years or 5 years, because the minute the guy says, I don't want to be here, it creates such a hysteria around the player and around your organization. And you say, hey, we can ride this out. You can't. And you have to move it. And again, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Luka or any of these other players, but organizations understand that's the world we live in right now. Mm-hmm. And so that is the urgency. Even if Luka signs that extension on the as soon as he can in free agency, that doesn't mean like you sit back and sigh and go, okay, we got him under, like, that's not how it works anymore. And listen, that's not how Mark Cuban's competitiveness, and you have Luka, you want to win. And so they've got to figure out how to reshape that roster around him. It is not good enough. The Kristaps Porzingis question is interesting. I think you put it a good way earlier this season to me when we were talking. I don't know if you said this on air, but the Mavericks' best chance of winning is with Kristaps versus what they can get for Kristaps right now, given the injury, the injuries, the contract, the performance this season. This is not a high trade value. That doesn't mean they can't do a trade or wouldn't. It just means you are not at a time where you're getting maximum value for him. And do you want to wait and try to, what you could get back for him might not be as appealing as trying to get him healthy and, a full off season.
Through that dynamic with Luka and him.
All those things. Yeah. What's your sense on Porzingis now, where his head is? How important? I know his relationship with Luka is not good. I also don't think it has to be. It doesn't have to be for two guys who want to win and play together. I just think we're always concerned with what everybody's relationship is. And if guys want to win, they usually figure it out.
Yeah. And as far as I know, it's not any kind of situation where, the locker room is split and there's not, it's not like those guys are having heated interactions. It's just kind of an awkwardness. And, I can throw out some numbers that point, when they are on the floor together, for the most part, the Mavericks are a historically elite offense. Unfortunately, the last memory you have was probably the worst possible playoff matchup for Porzingis, where the Clippers were going to go small, switch everything. Porzingis posting up is not what the Mavericks wanted, so he's standing in the corner a whole series. At this point, the sense that I get is that Kristaps Porzingis would not mind a fresh start, but his approach going into the offseason is, I've got a healthy offseason, which has been rare for him. He needs to work on his body. He needs to work on his game. And that he is determined to come back and prove that he is a star caliber player. Again, whether he's coming back to another franchise or not, that's not within his power. But, you know, my understanding is he had very productive conversations with the Mavericks player development staff going in. You know, he said the right things during his exit interview to the media. And, you know, it's just very difficult for the Mavericks to make a deal with Porzingis right now that would make sense for them, simply because you would be selling low. He was a significantly diminished player this year, and the circumstances were extremely difficult. Coming off of a knee surgery in the condensed pandemic season, you know, he didn't move well. Will he move better next season? If so, you know, it could be a totally different story. But again, I don't think he would mind a fresh start at all. But I do think he is realistic and is kind of looking at what can I do to become better instead of how can I get out of here.
Well, there's going to be a lot here in this Mavericks offseason, beginning with this search for a new president of basketball operations, GM, whatever the title is, and obviously head coach. You'll be all over it, Tim. Thanks for jumping in, man. We'll catch up soon.
Okay, appreciate it, Woj.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Woj Pod. A big thank you to both of my guests this week, Tim Bontemps and Tim McMahon. Be sure to listen to new and archived episodes of the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to also listen to the Adam Schefter podcast with the great Adam Schefter, The Low Post with Zach Lowe, and The Hoop Collective, hosted by Brian Windhorst. We'll catch you next time.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.